Hi, good morning, everyone. We'll take a moment to let everyone join the call, and then we'll get started. Well, good morning, everyone. We'll go ahead and just get started now. Wanted to thank everybody for joining us today. This is our 2025 year-end tax update call. Those of you who have joined us in the past, welcome back. If you're new to this call, welcome. I hope all of you find this information helpful. And I'm going to go ahead and share my screen before we go any further to have the slides up on the screen for us. I think we're good to go now. For those of you who not met or don't know me, my name is Mark Verdi. I'm the Director of Tax and Financial Planning here with Kotze and Gibb. And this is our 2025 year-end tax update call. As I mentioned earlier, we'll spend about 45 minutes or so, maybe up to a few minutes over that, discussing some of the most recent tax provisions that have been enacted with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, along with some other income tax provisions that have been around for a while. We'll touch on those more highlighted, but we'll get more into the more recent provisions in more detail. And for those of you who are joining us by phone, and so you have perhaps have accessed the PDF of the slides online from the invitation link, but you're following along on the audio with your phone and not following along with the slides on this presentation through Zoom, I will do my best to highlight where I am in the slides so that you can follow along. And I apologize in advance if I neglect to do that at times. And also apologize in advance if I speak too quickly or go through a lot of this information too quickly. But there is a lot to cover in a short amount of time. And you'll hear me say this throughout the presentation, that if you have questions, you know, after the call, if this spurs some thoughts around your individual tax situation, we're happy to speak with you offline about that. You can reach out to your wealth management advisor or to us directly, and we'll be happy to help you. I'll skip ahead a couple of slides here. In terms of my bio, again, I'm the Director of Tax and Financial Planning and the CFO of Kotze & Gibb Wealth Management. I'm in the Richmond headquarters office here in Richmond, Virginia. I've been with the firm since August of 2013, and I focus primarily on individual tax return preparation, trust tax, and planning, as well as personal financial planning. The next slide, our tax and financial planning team. We have a team of CPAs and certified financial planners as part of our team here in Richmond, who focuses on providing tax return preparation services, tax planning and consulting, and financial planning for our clients that engage us to do so. We work with all of our Kotze & Gibb Wealth Management clients who engage us to provide these services. And whether it's a one-off tax question you have, or a tax projection, annual income tax return preparation, or even a full-blown comprehensive financial plan, we work with you and your wealth management advisor to provide those services if you engage us to do so. And just as a quick plug for our tax return preparation services, that if you are interested in us preparing your taxes, whether it's for 2025 or future years, we welcome the opportunity to do that if we don't work with you already. We work with several hundred of our clients currently. And I will say that by way of timing, obviously we're getting near the end of 2025, hence the impetus of this call and other tax and financial planning engagements that are happening with you if you have a CPA or a tax preparer that you have been interacting with to get ready for year end. When we onboard new clients based on scheduling and timing and making sure we have resources to have a successful tax season, as we call it, in 2026, if you're interested in tax return preparation, we ask that you get in touch with your wealth management advisor or with me or someone on my team before the end of this year so that we could talk to you about our tax preparation process. There is a separate fee for that outside of the wealth management relationship, but we'd welcome the opportunity to work with you. The next slide, by way of the agenda, again, we're going to focus primarily on individual income tax and talk about some planning strategies related to the new tax provisions that have been enacted this year, as well as others that have been in effect for several years now. We'll also touch on estate and trust income taxation, because a lot of you have trusts that we prepare tax returns for or have potentially taxable estates, and we'll provide some planning strategies around estate tax and trust tax, as well as gift taxes. But that'll be more of a high level, just in the interest of time. and then a summary at the end if time permits. And I appreciate, again, your patience on walking through all of this in the next 45, 50 minutes or so. I'll skip ahead a couple of slides to the slide that is the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, or ABBA is probably how I'll refer to it just for brevity's sake throughout this call, was signed into law on July 4th of 2025. And for the purposes of this call, primarily, this made permanent many of the TCJA, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act provisions that were set to expire at the end of this year. Over the last several years, we have prepared tax returns for clients and done tax planning projections and implemented strategies based on not only what the current tax law is, but in anticipation of these provisions expiring at the end of 2025. Now, many of those have been made permanent, which includes lowering taxes or keeping the tax rates where they are. They were lowered as part of the TCJA, making those lower tax brackets permanent, and also adding some new provisions to lower taxes for many individual taxpayers, and also increase investment by business taxpayers. We do have several clients who are self-employed individuals or business owners, and that is not the focus of this call, but there are provisions within the ABBA that also will spur some investment by corporate taxpayers. The top individual tax rate is 37%. It was 39.6% back in 2017 and prior, but that is, again, all the brackets are remaining the same as they have been the last several years. The preferential qualified dividends and long-term capital gains tax rates at 0%, 15%, and 20%, those were made permanent. And I will also add that any of these provisions that we consider permanent simply means that the current law dictates that there are no sunset provisions or expiration dates on the quote-unquote permanent provisions, and that simply means that they are going to be in effect until Congress decides to act, since nothing is permanent as it relates to the tax code, as we're all well aware. Finally, on this slide, the 20% qualified business income deduction, or QBI deduction. Again, this is for you all who are self-employed individuals, business owners, and you have certain pass-through entities, S-Corps, LLCs, that generate business income that flows through to you on your individual tax return. And this is to establish parity with the C-Corps, the corporate taxpayers that enjoy a lower tax rate based on the TCJA, which the 21% bracket, I believe, or 21% rate that is afforded to corporations to establish parity for folks who are taxed on that income on their personal returns to provide a QBI deduction for that. The next couple of slides, the ordinary income tax rates, we are providing the tax brackets and the related taxable income amounts for each of those brackets for your reference. And by the way, these slides, there's a lot of detail within them. Obviously, I'm not going to read every one of them verbatim, but they were created to provide enough context and detail for future reference and to provide information that you can utilize for 2025 and 2026. And again, I won't touch on everything in there, but obviously if you have any questions related to any of these slides and need more detail, we're happy to discuss that with you individually. The ABBA, One Big Beautiful Bill Act, increased the tax brackets for inflation, the taxable income amounts for 2025. And then the next slide, 2026, for your reference, you can see the income ranges there. And this is based on your taxable income, which is your adjusted gross income minus your tax deductions. And that's something I'll point out now that we're talking about income. When you're looking at tax provisions and tax rates, and you'll see articles written in mainstream media or with, say, Kiplinger's, for example, they'll refer to income, income over a certain amount, income under a certain amount. And it's important to note that income can be a different amount depending on the definition of income for that particular provision. In this case, it's taxable income. Adjusted gross income, or AGI, is essentially all of your income items on your tax return before you take your tax deductions. So AGI, adjusted gross income, affects a lot of deductions and phase outs. And then there's something also called modified AGI, which we'll see later, or MAGI, and that is yet another definition of income. So in addition to knowing what the provisions are and what your income amounts need to be and what's you're subject to as far as phase outs, it's important to find out what the definition of income is for those particular provisions. The next slide here, the long-term capital gains tax rates for 2025, and the next slide I'll have 2026, are again 0 and 15 and 20%. They're based on your overall taxable income amounts, and those are on the screen there for various filing statuses, you know, single, married filing jointly, heads of household. And this is for long-term capital gains being taxed at preferential rates, and that's for gains that you realize when you sell assets that you've held for more than 1 year. It's important to note that short-term capital gains, if you have a stock that you've owned for less than a year, the income related to that, if you have a gain and realize that gain because you've sold the asset, that will be at your ordinary income tax brackets. The next slide here is the 2026 long-term cap gains, again, adjusted for inflation. So you can see the taxable income amounts there on that slide. And then also there's the net investment income tax on the next slide, the 3.8% surtax that's on your net investment income. And this includes your taxable interest, dividends, capital gains. If you have rental properties, your net rental income. If you have royalties from oil and mineral rights and other passive business activities, you may be invested in a publicly traded partnership that has passive investment income associated with it that's included on your tax return. And this tax is incurred by folks who have modified adjusted gross income that exceeds $200,000 if you're filing single, or $250,000 if you're a joint filer. And as I mentioned earlier, MAGI is typically the same as your AGI, but it can be different. And for this, the purposes of this tax, as well as some of the other deductions we'll get into, MAGI is essentially your AGI plus any foreign earned income that you have. If you, let's say you're in the military or you otherwise work overseas, and your income that is earned, that's foreign earned income that is excluded from U.S. income tax, then you have to add that amount back to calculate your income for the purposes of these types of taxes, the net investment income tax, and some deductions that we're going to talk about in later slides. So something to keep in mind when you are planning for your tax return preparation and tax liability, that you could be subject to this net investment income tax. On this next slide, you can see the calculation related to this. The net investment income tax is calculated on the lesser of your net investment income, your interest, dividends, cap gains, etc., or the amount by which your income exceeds $200,000 or $250,000. So you can see examples of the calculation on the screen there. And so again, be mindful of the fact that you could be subject to this tax. Several of our clients we work with, when we do projections, you look at your long-term capital gains rates, and as you saw on an earlier slide, you can say, well, that's going to be at 15%. Well, maybe if your income is over a certain amount, then it could be 18.8%. So something to keep in mind. The next slide, the 2025 standard deduction amounts. The TCJA, when that was passed several years ago, that doubled the standard deduction amount, and it eliminated the personal exemption, exemptions being an amount that you were able to deduct based on the number of taxpayers or folks in your household, if you had dependents and so forth. And those larger standard deductions were made permanent as part of ABBA. And you can see the amounts on the screen there for each of the filing statuses. There's a standard amount, and then there's a slightly larger amount if you're age 65 or older, and or blind or visually impaired. Then there are is an additional amount there. For example, married filing jointly, if you're both over age 65, your standard deduction is going to be the $31,500 plus $3,200 or $34,700. Because of that, there are a lot of folks who take the standard deduction instead of itemizing. But you'll see that based on changes with ABBA, there are more opportunities to itemize than there have been in the last several years. The next slide is the 2026 standard deduction amounts. The amounts were adjusted for inflation upwards a little bit. The next slide, the ABBA senior bonus deduction. This is an additional deduction that's temporary that is for tax years 2025 through 2028. And this provides an additional deduction for taxpayers that are age 65 and up to $6,000 per individual, and or up to $12,000 if you're married filing jointly and you're both 65 and over. And this particular bonus deduction, just as an aside, during the 2024 presidential campaign, President Trump mentioned no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, no tax on Social Security, those types of things. As it relates to the no tax on Social Security, this senior bonus deduction was enacted to, I guess, kind of keep that promise, if you will. the tax laws related to taxable Social Security have not changed, but this deduction is in effect mitigating the tax impact of your Social Security income. But there can be situations where if you're 65 or older and you haven't started taking Social Security, you're still eligible for this senior bonus deduction. So it's not tied specifically to Social Security. I hope that makes sense. But it is when you hear no tax on Social Security, this is what is, as far as tax law is concerned, is what is being talked about. The next slide, well, as you can see here on this slide, there are phase outs related to, again, modified adjusted gross income. On the next slide, senior bonus deduction, continued additional details. This deduction is available whether you itemize or take the standard deduction. And the phase out is if your modified adjusted gross income is over $75,000 if you're single, or $150,000 if you're married filing jointly. And at the bottom of this slide, there's an example of the calculation for the phase out. If you're married filing jointly, you're both over age 65 or over. So if your income is low enough and you meet the full eligibility for the deduction, you would get $12,000 as a senior bonus deduction on top of your itemized deductions or your standard deduction if you take the standard deduction. However, if it's reduced by 6 cents for every dollar that you're over that MAGI threshold. So let's, in this example, your MAGI is $225,000 or over by $75,000 over the threshold. So there's the phase out reduction of that $6,000 of $4,500 per person. And so your senior bonus deduction that would have been $12,000, it would be $3,000 as a combined available deduction. So I wanted to include this example of a phase out. So if you have modified adjusted gross income that's above the threshold, you still may benefit from some portion of the senior bonus deduction. On the next slide, other new deductions. I mentioned them briefly earlier. No tax on tips, no tax on overtime, no tax on car loan interest. I wanted to include those because you hear those a lot in the news. And when President Trump is speaking, he brings this up a lot. And so I wanted to provide some bullet points just for reference for you. I think that the car loan interest one may be one that may apply more to more of our clients than not, or than the others, I should say. If you purchase a vehicle this year, and these are effective 2025 through 2028, if it's purchased for personal use, and there are other eligibility criteria, but essentially passenger vehicles, SUVs under a certain weight, the maximum annual deduction is $10,000. And that phases out also if your MAGI is over $100,000, if you're a single taxpayer, or married filing jointly over $200,000. So this may apply to folks if you did have a car loan and you bought it this year or between now and the end of 2028. That's another deduction to keep in mind if you're itemizing your deductions. And at the bottom, CIRS.gov for additional details and guidance. Again, these are, you know, some bullet points to give you some context and some reference, but there are certain reporting criteria, qualification requirements, that and additional details that you would want to either talk with your CPA, reach out to your wealth management advisor, and meet with us in our tax and financial planning team to talk through your individual situation in more detail if you think one of these applies to you. The next slide, ABA itemized deductions, allowable itemized deductions. This should be slide 19 if you're following along in your PDF. The medical expenses is still deductible to the extent they exceed 7.5% of your AGI, your adjusted gross income. The big change with ABA is the SALT deduction, your state and local tax deduction. That when the TCJA was enacted, it reduced the amount that you could deduct on your tax return to $10,000 of your state and local taxes. And between the combination of doubling the standard deduction and capping the SALT deduction to $10,000, again, resulted in a lot more taxpayers taking the standard deduction, and a lot of folks that are in either high tax states or have high income in moderately taxed states were unable to take advantage of the taxes that they pay and deduct them on their income tax return. In this case, for most taxpayers, effective from the tax year is 2025, so this year through 2029, in this case, the increased cap deduction is $40,000. And that relates to your income taxes, your state property taxes, if you have taxes on your vehicles, for example, based on the value of your vehicles, and real estate taxes based on the value of your real estate. All of those combined, including your income taxes. So if you're in you know, Florida or Texas or Tennessee in a state that doesn't have an income tax, but there are some other state and local taxes. You want to keep that in mind if you have amounts that are eligible to be deducted, that you can take those into account. The Magi for this phase out is above $500,000 for any filing status, except for married filing separately. But if your income is over $600,000, then the cap is limited to the $10,000 as it was prior if your income is over $600,000. Now, the current sunset provision, or the expiration date, if you will, is 2030 on this increase in the SALT cap. So it will return to the $10,000 limitation in 2030, again, unless Congress passes new legislation. On the next slide, additional allowable itemized deductions. The mortgage interest deduction that was limited to mortgage balances of $750,000 used to be $1 million before the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That was made permanent. So the limit on in deducting mortgage interest is balances up to $750,000. And that also applies to home equity lines of credit and home equity loans. If those additional loans and lines of credit were used to acquire your home or to substantially improve your home or put on an addition and so forth, if you took out a home equity loan or line of credit to consolidate credit card debt, for example, that would not be deductible on your tax return. Miscellaneous itemized deductions were permanently eliminated. There used to be a time where you could deduct tax prep fees, investment management fees, and unreimbursed employee expenses. And again, as part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that was eliminated temporarily, but a part of ABBA that's now permanently eliminated. And at the bottom of the slide here, just to mention that there is a reduction, a slight haircut, if you will, for folks that are in the top tax bracket. If you're at the start of the 37% bracket and you're itemizing your deductions, keep in mind that there is a slight haircut of 2/37 of your the lesser of the total amount of your itemized deductions, or the amount by which your taxable income exceeds the start of the 37% tax bracket. On the next slide, this is slide 21, another allowable itemized deductions. Charitable contribution deduction limits were made permanent. 60% of your AGI for cash contributions, 50% of AGI for non-cash when you give clothing or furniture or other household items to Goodwill or the Salvation Army, for example. Capital gain property is limited to 30% of your AGI. And that would be essentially if you had appreciated stock, low basis stock, which is one of our planning strategies, and you're able to contribute stock to your favorite charity and get a deduction for the fair market value of that stock on the date that you gifted it, you avoid the taxable gain that you would have incurred and realized and the tax related to that if you had sold the stock and raised the cash and given cash to charity. But there is a limitation of 30% of your adjusted gross income that you can deduct in a given year. Now, for any of these limitations, if you have charitable contributions that exceed these percentages of AGI limitations, you're able to carry those forward over the next 5 years or until they're used up within those 5 years. Now, beginning in 2026, the second bullet point there, there will be an opportunity for folks that do not itemize to deduct $1,000 in cash charitable contributions or up to $2,000 if you're married filing jointly on your tax return. So that is for, again, for folks that are not itemizing, but you give to charity, you'll be able to deduct up to $1,000 or $2,000 beginning in 2026. And where the IRS and the Internal Revenue Code giveth, they also taketh away. In some ways, the taxpayers who itemize their deductions beginning in 2026 will have a 0.5% floor applied to those deductions. And so I give an example at the bottom of slide 21. In 2026, let's say you've given cash contributions, or really all charitable contributions, I should say, of $5,000 and your AGI is $100,000, just for easy math. The floor would be $500 or 0.5% of $100,000. And so your allowable deduction would be $4,500 and not the full $5,000. So that's something to keep in mind. It may or may not be a significant dollar amount based on your AGI, but from a timing perspective, if you're planning on giving to charity in 2025, if you're itemizing, you'll get a full benefit of that charitable contribution deduction, whereas you'll get a slight haircut if you contribute in 2026. The next slide, slide 22, the Trump accounts. This is something that I included in here because it's something you'll hear in the news. The formal legislative term for these Trump accounts is the individual trust account. And these are tax advantage savings and investment accounts for children under 18 that are going to be available for opening and funding after July 4th, 2026. So there was some talk about these when ABBA was first passed, but it's been pretty quiet since. I have a feeling they'll be in the news a lot more once we get closer to our 250th birthday on July 4th of 2026. And so I wanted to just highlight those, just provide some bullet points, information in here, and you'll get more guidance and more information related to this as we get closer to the date where you can open and fund these. But I wanted to at least include some bullet point features related to these, particularly the second bullet point: children that are born from January 1st of this year, 2025, through December 31st of 2028, who have a valid Social Security number, will be eligible for a one-time $1,000 initial deposit from the federal government. I don't have any information around administratively how this will work. I'm sure more guidance is to come, but again, I wanted to mention that because that $1,000 is certainly something to give newborns a head start on their retirement. Annual contributions are limited to $5,000, and these will grow tax-deferred. They're similar to an IRA in that they'll grow tax-deferred, but no withdrawals are permitted until the beneficiary reaches 18. And then at that point, from all the research that we've done here, they'll essentially function like a traditional IRA. If you take money out, you'll be taxed on the earnings, and there may be some penalties that apply if you take the money out early. And again, a lot of other details that I'm sure will come and guidance from the IRS when these are actually available. But again, wanted to provide some information related to those at a high level as part of this presentation, because I think it's something that will show up in the news in the coming months. The next slide, ABBA energy tax credits eliminated. When the Inflation Reduction Act was passed a couple of years ago, that act increased and expanded the energy tax credits that were available to us. The ABBA eliminated most, if not all, of those tax credits. I'm going to touch on three of the more prevalent ones that I think apply to you and me. And that is, the first one here is the Energy Efficient Home Improvement Credit. I'm on slide 23. The credit terminates for property placed in service after this year, after 12/31/2025. So if you're interested in purchasing exterior doors that are eligible for the home improvement credit, exterior windows, you can see some dollar amounts and limitations. And it's essentially a 30% credit on the costs related to these purchases. That includes installation costs, parts, labor, et cetera, materials. You'll want to do that in the next month and a half, because if you don't have those placed in service during 2025, this credit is eliminated. The next slide, the Residential Clean Energy Property Credit. This primarily relates to solar-powered property, solar panels, solar water heaters, etc. Again, this terminates for property placed in service after this year, after 12/31/2025. And so if this is something you're interested in pursuing, you would get a tax credit if it's placed in service by the end of this year. But once January 1, 2026 comes, the credit is no longer available. On the next slide, the Clean Vehicle Credit. This is actually a credit that's terminated now. It terminated for property placed in service after September 30th of this year. So if you purchased an electric vehicle and it meets the criteria prior to October 1st of this year, then you would get a credit up to $7,500 for a new vehicle. But if you purchased or are interested in purchasing one after November 1st, but sometime later this year, that credit is not available. So I wanted to mention that as well. That is a lot of information. I appreciate your patience in going through all of that. And so essentially, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act has a lot of provisions in it. I want to also mention, before we get into the other provisions, that the One Big Beautiful Bill Act provisions, we provided a supplement to our Wealth Management Dispatch, our quarterly newsletter, back in July 2025, with a lot of these provisions, as well as some additional provisions included on that newsletter. And we included a link to that PDF in the call invite site link. So I recommend that you, in addition to using these slides as a reference, you can utilize that supplement to have more detail around the different provisions of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Now I'll touch briefly on some of the acts and provisions that have been around for a few years, and the SECURE Act being one of them that was enacted back in 2019. I'm not going to read through all of these slides in the interest of time, but I will touch on some more prevalent items that I think apply to the majority of us. One of those is that, just as a reminder, the traditional IRA contribution used to have a 70.5 age limit. Once you were over that age, if you were still working, you could no longer contribute to your IRA. That has no longer the case. So if you are working, you're able to contribute to your IRA, the lesser of the annual contribution limit amount and what your earned income is. Required minimum distributions, age was bumped to age 72, and with the Secure 2.0, which we'll see later, was bumped to age 73 and age 75, depending on your birth date. And the most prevalent thing I would say that we deal with here with our clients is the stretch IRA distributions at the bottom of the screen. There used to be more opportunities to stretch out an inherited IRA. So when you inherit an IRA, as many of you know, you have to take distributions from those IRAs because the IRS wants to tax that income. And then you put that income into a taxable account and it earns taxable income, investment income, versus leaving it in the tax deferred account. And there used to be more opportunities to stretch those IRA distributions over your life expectancy. With the Secure Act, that was limited largely, and again, this is high level, there are some exceptions, but if you're a spouse and you inherited an IRA from your spouse who has passed away, you're the surviving spouse, you have the opportunity to take the distributions from that IRA over your life expectancy, essentially treating it as your own IRA. But if you're a non-spouse, if you're a trust, an estate, there are different shorter periods of time. And we'll focus on the 10-year rule for non-spouse beneficiaries. Over the years between 2019 and 2024, there was a lot of confusion and a lot of different interpretations around whether you needed to take distributions each year. Let's say you inherited an IRA and you're subject to the 10-year rule because you're not a spouse of the decedent. Then do I need to take money out every year, or can I wait till the 10th year? If I have to take money out every year, how much does that have to be? And so a lot of those questions have been answered in the years hence. In 2024, the IRS issued some final regulations that, yes, you must take annual distributions. Again, there are some exceptions, and fully liquidate the inherited IRA by the end of the 10th year after the deceased IRA owner passed away. The next slide, 29, the beneficiary distributions, final regulations. I just want to touch on this really quickly as far as folks who are, and just as a point of clarification, this is for folks that inherited IRAs in 2020 or later. If you inherited an IRA before 2020, the Secure Act provisions don't apply, and you would continue to take the RMDs as you have been taking them each year. But if you inherited as of January 1st, 2020 or beyond, then you're subject to the 10-year rule. And if someone passed away before they reached their required beginning date, which is if they had not been subject to RMDs yet, then the entire IRA must be liquidated by the end of the 10th year after the owner's passing, but the annual RMDs are not required. Now, from a planning perspective, we work with our clients to determine whether you should be taking RMDs in years 1 through 9, whether you're required to or not. It may make sense based on your tax situation to smooth out that income, taxable income effect over those 10 years versus waiting until the 10th year. Conversely, we've seen situations where someone is still working and they have a high income, they're in a high tax bracket, but they're nearing retirement and may retire in a couple of years, and they inherit this IRA, but have the ability to defer those minimum distributions into later years. And so it may make sense to hold off on making annual distributions until year 5, let's say, just making up a year, year 5 or year 6, once you've retired, and let's say you're not on Social Security yet, so your income is relatively low and you're in the lower tax brackets. So it is imperative to talk with your wealth management advisor. If you've inherited an IRA and you're non-spouse, you know how much you should take out of the inherited IRA, whether you're required to, and how much that should be. For folks that inherited an IRA on or after someone has already started taking their RMDs, then you do need to take RMDs each year in years 1 through 9, and to have it fully distributed in the 10th year after the owner passed away. And that amount can be based on your life expectancy table or the life expectancy table of the decedent, based on IRS tables that are out there that calculate that amount for you. And again, that's the minimum amount you need to take out. but there may be reasons for tax purposes and tax efficiencies to take more than the required minimum distribution. And finally, the inherited Roth IRAs are also subject to the 10-year rule. They must be fully liquidated by the end of the 10th year following the death of the IRA owner, but annual RMDs are not required for the Roth IRAs. The next slide, again, spouses are exempt from this 10-year rule. The only thing I'll touch on this slide is that children who have not reached the age of majority, they are also exempt from the 10-year rule. As I mentioned earlier, they may not have to take any distributions at all, or they may have to take minimum distributions based on their age. But once they reach age 21, it switches to the 10-year rule. I'm just really thankful that the IRS keeps these things very simple. On the next slide, Secure 2.0. This is was signed into law in 2022. Again, a lot of information here for your reference, but the things I'll touch on will be on the next slide. The RMD rules on slide 32 of 51. The Secure 2.0 increased the RMD age to age 73 beginning in 2023 and then age 75 in 2033. The next slide, retirement catch-up contributions. For those of us who are over age 50, we're able to contribute additional amounts to our retirement accounts, to our IRAs, to our 401ks. And traditionally that amount for the IRA catch-up for your traditional and Roth IRA is $1,000, but it historically wasn't indexed for inflation. But the Secure 2.0 provided for annual inflation adjustments going forward. And in 2025, it's still $1,000, but it has been updated for 2026 to $1,100. And the annual catch-up contribution limit for most employer retirement plans, your 401ks, your 403bs, is for folks that are age 50 and older is $7,500. But starting in 2025, the Secure 2.0 provides for an increased retirement plan catch-up amount. So in addition to the $7,500, if you're aged between ages 60 and 63, starting in 2025, you're able to contribute an additional amount equal to the greater of $10,000 or 150% of the standard catch-up contribution limit. So effectively in 2025, your catch-up would, if you're age 60, between ages of 60 and 63, your catch-up will be $11,250 instead of $7,500. For a total of $34,750 that you could defer in a 401k or 403b, for example, of your income. Now, on the next slide, this Secure 2.0 initially enacted a rule where this catch-up contribution would be subject to Roth treatment, be after-tax and not pre-tax. Historically, you've been able to choose whether you want your entire deferral to be pre-tax or a Roth or a combination of both. This mandates that it needs to be a Roth contribution if your annual income is over $145,000. In 2026, it'll be $150,000. But there was a lot of confusion around the language when it was initially enacted, and retirement plan sponsors and third-party administrators. It was quite a burdensome administrative burden to get this set up in the systems. And so the IRS pushed this along and kicked it down the road a little bit. And in September of this year, they issued final regulations to clarify certain provisions and to extend the effective date to January 1, 2027. So in January 1, 2027, these catch-up contribution amounts, if your income is over $145,000, again, indexed annually for inflation, it'll be at least $150,000, if not more, by the time we reach 2027. They will be Roth treatment mandated for those catch-up contributions. There may be more on this in the future if history serves, because it has been something that has been cumbersome to try to implement. And so we'll see. But right now, that's where it stands. In 2027, retirement plans will have to treat these catch-up contributions as Roth after-tax contributions for folks that have income over those thresholds. Okay, so now we've gotten through all of the provisions. We only have a few minutes left. I hope you'll bear with me in going through some of the planning strategies and in response to these provisions. The next slide, I'm on slide 36, the maximizing your retirement plan and IRA contributions, your 401k, your 403bs, your traditional IRAs, your SEP IRAs if you're self-employed. One thing to note on this slide, I highlighted some amounts here because prior to this call and when we had updated these slides to publish them on our website for the invitation to you to follow along, these were not finalized. So I had included some highlighted amount and noted them as expected to increase in 2026 to these values that are on the screen. I will say that these, as of last night, and we got an email literally an hour before the call, that these amounts are correct and they are the inflation adjusted amounts per the IRS. So I will update these slides after this call for that information and remove the highlights, and we can update that slide for you. The one item on this slide I want to highlight is here in the middle where it says overall annual limit $70,000, expected to increase to 72, 80,000 if you're over age 50, 83, 250 if age 60 to 63. This is something in haste. Admittedly, I changed this morning. Your slide probably says 81,000, 250 or the slides that were on the site. And if you're following along on the PDF that was provided in the invitation, but it is actually 83,250. And again, I'll update all of this information and publish that so you have the most accurate, up-to-date information. As it relates to planning for these IRA contributions and 401k contributions, there are really two schools of thought related to this. Pre-tax is certainly valuable if you're still working, you're in a high income tax bracket, and you know that once you retire, you're going to be in a lower tax bracket. And when you start taking distributions from your 401k or your IRA, those distributions are going to be taxed at a lower rate. It makes sense to do a pre-tax contribution in that regard. The other thought is that from historically, we are now in the lowest tax rate environment that we've ever been and we probably ever will be in. And so if there's certainly an argument to be made to, regardless of what tax bracket you're in, but certainly if you're in, say, the 22, 24, 32% bracket, let's go ahead and make after-tax Roth IRA contributions. That way, those Roth IRA contributions grow tax-deferred. They come out tax-free later, regardless of what income tax brackets are at that time. And the Roth IRAs, not counting inherited Roth IRAs, but your own Roth IRA is not subject to RMDs. So a lot of clients for legacy planning, for estate planning, and they want their heirs to inherit a Roth IRA and enjoy tax-free distributions from those IRAs at that time. There's certainly, you know, a lot of value to Roth after-tax contributions as well. A lot of times, you know, a balance of both. So you have kind of a tax diversification around your investments makes sense as well. And we've consulted with our clients who are kind of on the fence in terms of being in the middle of the tax brackets, maybe somewhat up on the upper end of the tax brackets, and thinking about what their overall objectives are. Again, whether it's leaving money to their heirs, or if they want to minimize their taxes now and not worried about what the tax rates are later, doing pre-tax versus Roth, or a combination of the two. On the next slide, Roth IRA conversions or traditional IRA distributions. The last slide was related to contributions and whether they should be pre-tax or after-tax. This is referring to distributions or Roth IRA conversions, where you're incurring the tax now because you have rolled over your 401k and it's always been pre-tax. And now when you take money out, you're going to have to pay taxes on it. And you also have traditional IRA distributions that are going to be taxed. And maybe you're younger than the age 73 or 75, where you'll have to start taking RMDs, but you're in a tax bracket situation where it makes sense to go ahead and take some of those distributions or do some Roth conversions under the current tax rate environment. And some of the considerations on the screen there are things to think about when you are making those types of decisions, whether you want to do a Roth conversion or distribute money from your traditional IRA, particularly if you have the cash outside of your IRA to pay the taxes so you can fully convert the Roth. Another thing to think about as it relates to Roth conversions and taking IRA distributions is the impact on your overall income and your adjusted gross income. It may make sense and seem tax efficient based on the rates, but if it could make you subject to the net investment income tax, that 3.8% surtax I mentioned earlier, if it affects the senior bonus deduction, which is tied to AGI, or other itemized deduction amounts that are tied to your adjusted gross income. And finally, and I mentioned at the bottom of the screen there, your impact on Medicare premiums, what's called your income-related monthly adjustment amount. A lot of our clients are subject to that because their income is over a certain amount. The Medicare premiums are higher. And if you convert to an IRA or take additional distributions from your traditional IRA, that's going to increase your income and could expose you to some of these, what we call tax triggers, things that weren't part of the regular tax brackets, but are tacked on and are additional costs to you that you just need to keep in mind. And it's something that we keep in mind as we meet with our clients who are considering some of these strategies, because you want to look at the tax bracket you're in, but also some of these tax triggers and non-tax rate issues like the Medicare premiums that could sneak up on you and be an unpleasant surprise. Next slide, long-term capital gains. I'm on slide 38. We're almost done. 0%, 15% tax rates, taking advantage of those rates and when you have appreciated stock, and harvest losses where appropriate. As a firm at Got Team Give, we will look annually at program trades as to whether we want to take losses. We do not look at harvesting losses in a tax vacuum. Yes, as a CPA, if I'm trying to focus on the objective of lowering your current year taxes, sure, harvesting losses would make sense. It's going to lower your taxable income. However, as a wealth management firm and working closely with your wealth management advisor and our portfolio management team and our chief investment officer here, we look at your overall situation, your overall investment objectives, and does it make sense to harvest some losses, because we're not trying to time the market. But if it makes sense where it's appropriate, of course, it can be helpful to take advantage of that. Itemized deductions versus standard deduction. As I mentioned earlier, historically, the standard deduction has been more prevalent because it was a larger amount, but now there may be opportunities to itemize with the SALT cap being increased, but also maybe worthwhile bunching your itemized deduction for additional tax benefit. And at the bottom of the screen, I mentioned bunching your charitable contributions. So essentially, if you are philanthropically minded and you typically give money to your favorite charity each year, but it's not enough to warrant itemizing your deductions because the standard deduction is higher, but if you were to combine several years of those contributions in 1 year, let's say you give $10,000 a year to your favorite charity, but it's not enough to itemize. If you were to give $50,000, just making up a number for easy math, then you would be able to itemize that in the current year versus making $10,000 a year for the next 5 years. One way that you're able to accomplish both objectives, and I mentioned it here at the bottom of the slide, is a donor advised fund. And that is where you would contribute a larger amount in the current year and to a donor advised fund, get the tax deduction for the current fair market value, whether it's cash, whether it's appreciated stock, which I mentioned earlier, you get the fair market value of the stock that you've contributed to this donor advised fund, get the full charitable deduction in the current year. And then in future years, not only have you gotten that deduction, but you have control over the distributions that are made from that donor advised fund to your favorite charities over future years. So that's kind of the best of both worlds, getting the deduction. But if you have philanthropic objectives where you want to provide a certain amount of dollars to your charities over multiple years, you can accomplish that with a DAF, as some people call the donor advised fund. If you're interested in more about that, that's something that you would talk to your wealth management advisor about there, and they would know more about how those work, how those get set up, etc. Next slide, bunching medical expenses. This works similar to the charitable contributions. You have that 7.5% of AGI threshold that needs to be cleared. And because of that hurdle, in most years, you're not able to take advantage of the amount that you're paying for medical expenses because the standard deduction is higher, which is great. It's great that you have a high standard deduction, but you're also making these medical expense payments that you would like to be able to deduct, but you're unable to. If there's a way to time those, I don't think this is as easy, unfortunately, as charitable contributions, but if you know that you're going to have an elective surgery or a procedure, or you're going into a move into an independent living facility or a care center that has a large entrance fee, a portion of which can be considered medical expenses, being able to time those types of expenses in 1 year may get you over that AGI hurdle and allow you to itemize those deductions and take the standard deduction in alternating years. There's information about health and savings accounts in the interest of time. I'll skip over those, but the limits and all are there. I mentioned at the bottom the tax credits for clean energy items expiring at the end of this year, if that's something that is applicable to you and is practical for you to look into before the end of the year. You want to time your purchases accordingly. The next slide, qualified charitable distributions or QCDs. This is something that we recommend if you are over age 70 and a half and you have an IRA, particularly if you're over age 72 or 73 and you are subject to RMDs. You are able to contribute funds directly to charity from your IRA, and that will count towards your RMD. Taking those distributions from your IRA, typically are obviously taxable income to you. If it goes directly to the charity from your IRA, that is not included in your taxable income, which is helpful for two reasons. One, it is not included in your taxable income, lowers your tax liability, but it's also not included in your adjusted gross income, which I know I've talked about a lot today, affects the phase out of other deductions. So there's a lot of value to contributing as a QCD to charity if you can do that. The amounts on the screen there for 2025 and 2026 are $108,000 and $115,000. I will note that the 1099-R that you receive at the end of the year, the form that reports your distributions from your IRA, will not show this QCD. So you must let your tax preparer know to adjust for the QCD. And for those of you who work with us, we have access to that information either through your account, or you've notified your wealth management advisor or us directly that, hey, I took $100,000 out of my IRA, for example, but $10,000 of that I sent directly to charity. And so we would make an adjustment on your tax return, noting that you had a $10,000 QCD in that example. So very important to make sure that your tax preparer is aware of the QCD that you made. Investment management fees. This has been in play since the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. We used to recommend deducting your wealth management fees from a taxable account because they used to be deductible on your tax return. But since they're no longer deductible and that's been made permanent because of the ABBA, you want to have your IRA's management fees paid directly from your IRA. That's effectively a tax-free distribution from your IRA. But it's important to remember that only the fees related to that specific IRA can be deducted and can be paid from the IRA, not any other accounts. So you want to make sure that the wealth management fees only related to that specific IRA are paid by that specific IRA. And finally, checking in with your tax preparer or your CPA at this time of the year. As I mentioned earlier, it's a tax planning season, and it's good to check in with your CPA, especially if your income has changed significantly from earlier in the year. When we work with our tax clients and prepare their tax returns, we also ask about their current year income and help calculate their estimated tax payments and what their withholdings should be from their pay if they're still working, or from their RMDs, because we recommend if you are taking IRA distributions to have any estimated taxes withheld from your IRA versus making the quarterly estimated payments just administratively. It's much more convenient and you don't have to keep up with separate payments and separate deadlines. And if that's changed significantly from what was previously estimated, it may be worthwhile to meet with your CPA and see if there needs to be an adjustments to your withholdings or to making that fourth quarter estimated tax payment. And one thing now I'll mention related to the quarterly estimated tax payments is that because of the SALT deduction I mentioned earlier being $40,000 now instead of $10,000, again, I know I'm beating a dead horse here, but there may be more opportunities to itemize deductions, but also there may be a benefit to making sure you pay that state tax payment if you're making Q4 payments by 12/31 instead of waiting till typically it's January 15th of the next year is when it's due. But if you paid it in the current year, it can be part of your SALT deduction if you itemize. Again, because of the limit, previous years that wasn't as beneficial of a strategy, but now that the limit is higher, I recommend that you look into that and see if it makes sense to go ahead and make your Q4 payment before the end of the year at least for your state taxes, so that you can include that in your current year tax deductions. I know we're pretty much out of time, but just real quick on state and trust tax law, because we do a lot of trust tax returns. The rates have stayed the same and they're on the screen there. Preferential qualified dividends and capital gains. The one thing I'll point out is that the taxable income amount is much lower as far as the brackets. 37% is reached at almost $16,000. It will be $16,000 in 2026. So to the extent that if your trust document allows for this, distributing income to your beneficiaries, your interest and dividends to your beneficiaries, then it will be taxed at the beneficiaries' individual income tax rates, which oftentimes is lower than being taxed to the trust itself. But again, that's something you'll want to look into in detail with your tax advisor. The next slide, I'm on slide 44, estate and trust tax law overview. The ABBA has been made permanent with the TCJA's doubled estate and gift tax exemption amount. It is now almost $14 million in 2025. It'll be $15 million in 2026, or effectively $30 million per couple if you're married filing jointly. This was something a lot of folks were concerned about going back to about half of this amount after the TCJA expired, but it has been made permanent, so less estates will be subject to taxation at 40%. Annual gift tax exclusion amounts on there. I am pretty much out of time. The last thing I want to touch on is, I think this is important, it's all important, but I think for purposes of talking through how this works, this last slide I'll talk about is slide 46, is the deceased spouse's unused exemption amount and the portability of that amount. If you're a married couple and a spouse passes away, there is an opportunity to transfer the deceased spouse's unused estate exemption amount to the surviving spouse. And we actually have had that happen with one of our clients where a spouse passed away and there was not a taxable estate. There was no need to file a Form 706 estate tax return based on that estate. But the surviving spouse, based on the assets that the surviving spouse had, including obviously having the deceased spouse's assets now, and based on their age and life expectancy and projected appreciation of those assets, there was a concern that when the surviving spouse passes away, they will have a taxable estate. And so it was valuable to file a Form 706 and elect portability of the deceased spouse's unused exemption amount. So now that amount effectively tax on to the surviving spouse's amount to avoid taxation at the estate level, which could effectively save literally millions of dollars in tax. So that's something that it's never a good conversation to have, you know, around, you know, deceased, passing away. And it's not a fun conversation, but it is a valuable conversation when it comes to tax savings. So I wanted to just mention that. Finally, revisit your estate planning documents, your wills, your trusts with your estate attorney. There have been a lot of changes with the tax law. It's always good every few years to check in and make sure everything's up to date. But now more than ever, with all the proliferation of tax law changes over the last five years or so, it makes sense to meet with your attorney, make sure that your documents still reflect your intentions based on current law. And I will stop there. There are summary slides. It's basically reiterating, and I'm flipping through those now, what I've already talked about. I know we're out of time. I'm well over. I appreciate, for those of you who remain on the call, I really appreciate your time today. And we really value all of you as clients of Godsey & Gibb. I hope that you found this useful. If you have questions subsequent to this call, of course, as I mentioned earlier, reach out to your wealth management advisor. Reach out to us directly. We will have a transcript of this call online in the next couple of weeks. So you'll be able to refer to this call online in the coming weeks. But I wish you and your family the happiest of Thanksgivings this year and happy holidays. And I hope that I get to see you all soon. Take care.